This is the continuation of session 4.
All suffering of a creature in this realm is directly brought about by their belief that something that doesn't even exist and which could never exist is here. And that becomes important. That thing which never existed, never could exist, and doesn't exist becomes crucial, because I'm tired of, you know, my life going up and down. I'm just tired of it, you know. If there's some way to stop it, I would appreciate it. You know, I don't want to lose all my friends. I love all of you. I want to stay with those people. I want all the good stuff, and I don't want any of the bad stuff. Is it possible? You know, is it possible? And it all boils down to that. That also becomes crucial to understand an object. So emptiness is the absence of that thing. When I move my eyes from left to right in this room, it's a lot of positive things. It cannot be the case that emptiness is what I see. And it cannot be the case that what I see is emptiness. And it cannot be the case that what I see is nothing other than emptiness. And it can't be the case that emptiness is nothing other than what I see. The Buddha must be speaking figuratively, okay? So you can cancel all those weird teachings that say that emptiness is some kind of black hole in the side of your head, or some ineffable, mystical, weird state that, you know, if you get lucky and you're walking in a nice garden, you might see it, you know, or something like that. It's not that at all, okay? No such thing. It can't be what you see, because that's positive thing. That's the first thing to say. So there has to be something else. He must be saying something else, okay? What he's saying is that in Zajik Dobatade, okay? Zajik Dobatade we studied. It was not a big subject, but we studied it. And the idea is Zajik means same stuff, okay? Zajik means same stuff. Dopa means that idea of the opposite of all that the thing is not. Okay? Dokpa means, for example, Sukmayambale Lokpa. The opposite of all that I am not is me. You see what I mean? If you take everything that's not Michael Roach and you reverse it, you get Michael Roach. It's Picasso's theory of painting. I forget who it was. But anyway, by arranging the spaces properly, you define the figure. You know, you don't paint the figure, you paint all the background and thereby create the figure. You know, I have one like that. I was just thinking of that. That's our CD-ROM cover or something like that. But you see, this one is the reject, okay? But the flame in the middle is defined by the absence of what's around it. You see what I mean? That's all. It's that idea. That's called a dokpa. Okay? And in the logic schools, that's how you perceive all things. Your mind cancels everything that's not the object. And that's called a dokpa. So what are we getting to? Zajig means same stuff. Essentially the same stuff. Dokpa tade means different identity or a different version of the same stuff. And that's a very important concept to understand. Rinpoche refers to all American fast food as Zajik and Dokpa Tade. It's all the same crap in a different format. You know what I mean? Like, it's the same sugar, the same flour, the same salt, and the same food coloring. Exactly. You know, when you go into a 7-Eleven, you try to find some real food, it's like impossible. It's all the same, it's exactly the same materials with different food coloring and different processing in different form, in different versions of the same crap. And that's Zajik Dopa Tade. Okay? It means they're all the same junk. Exactly. Salt, sugar, flour, ribble flavor, FDA approved food coloring. But it's all a different version of the same stuff. Okay, and it's important to think of that. That's Zajik Dopa Tade. That's what Zajik Dopa Tade means. If you think about it, You can't say that the emptiness of this and it are the same thing. You cannot say that. They are not chik. There's a difference between jik, chik, and zechik. Okay? Big difference. Okay? Those of you who studied logic, you're completely comfortable with what I'm saying, right? Okay. There's a difference, big difference between chik and zechik. Okay? Chik means, okay, these two are not chik. Okay? They are not the same thing. There's two different things. Okay? They're tade. There's two different things. They're not chik. They're not one thing. Because I got two hands and I'm, you know, one's over here and one's over here. So they're not chik. They're not one and the same. But they are zechik, right? It's the same stuff. Zechik doba tade. This is paper mixed up in a certain format, and this is paper mixed up in a different format. Are they one and the same? No. Are they zechik? Are they the same stuff? Yes. Are they different expressions or different versions of the same stuff? Yes. They're zechik doba tade. Choned Lama makes a very compelling argument here about emptiness and dependent origination. Okay, and that's the whole point. And, you know, then lights will go off in your head and you'll understand the Whole Heart Sutra and we can just go swimming tomorrow or something. You know. The fact that nothing in this room exists, number two way, okay? The fact that nothing in this room really is coming from its own side, which is its emptiness. Okay. And the fact that everything in this room is number three. It is my mind forcing me to organize sense data in a certain way because of the influence of karma. Whose karma? My karma, in my mind, is making me see things a certain way. Those are zechik dopa tade. Those are two versions of the same reality. It's the same fast food in two different versions. One happens to be positive, one happens to be negative. I'll say it again, okay? The fact that nothing in this room that you can lay your eyes on is coming from its own side is the emptiness of the colors and shapes in this room. The fact that everything in this room, that I'm forced to see everything in this room a certain way because of my past karma and the effect of that karma on my mind, its dependent origination, is just another expression of the same reality. Okay, one is positive, one is negative. One is Twinkies and one is Hostess cupcakes. Okay, you know, one is black and one is white. Okay. I mean, one is totally black and one is white. One is negative, one is positive. But it's zechik doba tade. It's the same old stuff. It's different configurations of the same raw material. And that's what the Buddha meant. God bless him. You know, when he said, you know what I mean? Now that's the holiest thing a person can say, probably. Yeah. I mean, except for I love my lama or something like that. When, but so that's what he's saying. Okay, Suptomo means the things around you are empty. Number two, just remember number two. They are not number two. They don't exist from their own side. That's their emptiness. Well, what are they? Tombani sukso. They are what your karma forces you to see. So who cares about all this philosophy? I was hoping to straighten my life out. You just gave me more complicated stuff to worry about. You know? The implications are immense. The implications are life-saving. If you can find out the best way to collect powerful karma, your whole reality will automatically change. You can reach a Buddha paradise in this life. No problem. Okay. That's the whole point. You know? That's why he's teaching it. So the implications are the most important in your life. Sukto bao, tomani suso. Everything you see doesn't come from its own side. Domini Suso, it's all coming from your mind. Okay? And you can fix it. Even that event you call death, and even that event you call aging. And if you practice well enough, you don't have to go through either one. You know. We'll get to a part later. People say I'm being extreme. They say, don't tell Americans that. You get their hopes up. And then they have to go to the doctor the next week. And, you know, and it's unfair. You know, it's a lot harder than that. It's not harder than that. And I'm not unfairly raising your hopes. It's exactly that. And later on in this sutra, the Buddha will say, Gashisipipadu yang meddo. You can stop your death and you can stop your aging. And don't say that Michael Roach is making it up or trying to raise your hopes or something like that. It's in the Heart Sutra. I'm not just trying to, you know, be heavy or something like that. It's the whole point of Buddhism is that. And that's why the Heart Sutra goes down to that. We didn't get there yet, but, you know, if I claim that I'm teaching classes to reach that, it's not a claim, you know, it's a purpose of having a class. It's what you want out of your religion. So we'll get there. All right, so that, now you understand the four applications. Sutombo, Domishin, so. First one is talking about the emptiness of this room, that it's not what you thought. It's not coming from its own side. If it was coming from its own side, we're dead ducks. You see, the Buddha said that, Jetsun Kapa said that. If things are coming from their own side, we're in trouble. But you can't change them. You know, you got to die. You might as well go out and have a bud. One life to live, you know. Domini Suso means, hey, look, the real way it is that it's coming from you. Okay, it's coming from your mind. There is data out there, in a way. And your past karma is forcing you to interpret it in a certain way. If you could straighten out your life, if you could keep your vows carefully, checking them constantly, then your reality would change. You know, you can have anything you dream of. And when you get good at it, you get confirmation. And it's very sweet. And you get into it, you know, like, hey, man, I could get rid of that supervisor at work if I just be nice to her. You know, like, you know? And it becomes an art form, you know, like you go after this person. You know, I'm going to change them. Either I'll change them into the sweetest person in the office or they'll get transferred, you know. And I will accomplish that by being compassionate and understanding towards them. And it works. It's just so unnatural that you don't ever get the chance to try it. You never really seriously test it. If you did, you could get rid of all those people and be in a Buddha paradise. Okay? They would change. The people you think are the most hopeless, the people that irritate you and that you imagine could never ever change, will change. But you have to love them. It's very profound. So anyway, Sule Domini Shemai and Domini Nekan Sushino. Then he goes on to say, it's nothing other than that. Emptiness is nothing other than what you see, and what you see is nothing other than that. The second two, okay? Sule Domini Shemai and Domini Nekan Sushino. Why does he throw that in? Why didn't he just say, everything you see is empty, and everything you see is determined by your former karma, you know, what you did before. Why didn't he leave it at that? Now why does he push it? Why does he say, look, what you see is nothing other than emptiness, and emptiness is nothing other than what you see? Now why does he go ahead and push it? He's trying to stress the zaychik part, the part that they are really different versions of the same fast food. Okay, he's trying to stress that they are truly different manifestations of the same essential material. Okay, and then he gives an example. Chöni Lama gives an example, and he says, "Perna sugnien dawan nawan tan de dawan ma du pa ningo chi ching tade mayim pa taro." If you go out at night on this lake, on this pond, or you know, and it's a quiet night and it's dark. Like I've gone out there at very weird hours of the night just to look at it, and it's quiet and the moon is up above like a full moon, and you see this beautiful moon in the lake. Okay. Is there a moon in the lake? You have to say no. Okay. Is there a reflection of the moon in the lake? You have to say yes. Is the reflection of the moon in the lake the moon? You have to say no. Now catch this. And this is the meaning of the second two of the four statements. When he says, hey, emptiness is nothing other than what you see, and what you see is nothing other than emptiness. What it means is, put your mind on these two things. The reflection of the moon in the pond, A, over here, okay? Which is a positive or negative? Positive. Positive. Okay. And then over here you have the fact that that ain't the moon itself. Okay? I'll do it again. Over here you have forget the moon in the sky. We're not talking about that. Let's leave him out of the picture. We're talking about what's in the pond. There's a reflection of the moon in the pond. What do you call it in a jury trial? I say, exhibit number one. Okay, exhibit number one, the reflection of the moon in the pond. Exhibit number two, the fact that that ain't the real moon. Okay, which both exist. Okay, do they have a relationship? Yeah. What's the test of a relationship, you logicians who took Gyeongdae? Okay? If you remove one, the other has to go away. Okay? If it weren't true that there was a reflection of the moon in the pond, could it still be true that the reflection is not the real moon? No. If it were not true that the reflection was not the real moon, could you still have a reflection in the pond? No. They have to have a relationship. Okay? They have to have a relationship. One happens to be negative, exhibit B, and one is positive, exhibit A. They are Twinkies and Hostess cupcakes. Okay? Same stuff, different expressions of the same stuff, black and white, you know, and they depend on each other for their existence. Okay, the one is a positive thing, the reflection of the moon, and one is a negative thing, the fact that that's not the real moon. But they go hand in hand. So he's trying to say, hey, look, the fact that everything is being foisted on you by your past deeds and what you said and what you thought last week about Aunt Joan, okay, the fact that that's being forced on you, and the fact that the things around you don't have any other mode of existence, are two versions of the same stuff. And don't ever think they're different from each other. Okay? Are they separate? Yes. Could you ever have one without the other? No. So when he says, no other than, not other than, Sule Shemayin, he means they are not unrelated. They are not unconnected. Emptiness and dependent origination depend on each other. And you can't have one without the other. One is the positive expression of the other. One is the negative expression of the other. They depend on each other. That, by the way, eliminates the very wrong and harmful view that emptiness means that nothing matters or nothing counts or everything is an illusion. I don't have to be moral. I don't have to relate to the world in a normal way. It's all just nothing. So I can do whatever I want. That's a very evil, wrong view. Jetsun Kapa said it's like a hailstorm that moves through the Lhasa Valley and cuts down the wheat of the entire valley. The wheat being representing the happiness of the entire world. And that viewpoint, that emptiness somehow means that nothing matters, being the hailstorm. And it's an evil to say that. And it's not at all what it means. If emptiness is true, over here, right, cupcake, then karma is absolutely true. and you must be moral, and you must be a good person, and you must be compassionate and kind to others, and you must take care of everyone. You know, not the opposite. Come, you don't understand anything if you say that. Okay? That's the whole implication of that, of the third and fourth statements. Okay? So he's covered them like that. I think it's a very sweet place to stop, actually. I'm getting hungry from all those cupcakes and stuff. That's the point, okay? And now you got it. It's very, very powerful. And it can save your life. You know, I hope it does. I hope at least a few people in here keep your book and take your vows and move properly and sweetly into the tantric teachings and then get enlightened, you know. And think of us and come and help us, okay? All right, let's stop there.
This is the end of Session 4. Session 5.
I'm sorry for the delay, and we did it as fast as we could, but couldn't finish on time. The sutra after that, by the way, in the root text, we're on the last line of page 3. He just got through applying the four descriptions of emptiness to your physical body, and the main component of that being what you can see. And now he's going to move on and apply it to the rest of your being, the other four heaps. So then he says, Deshindu, Tsoa dan Dushi dan Duchi dan Membership and Domba O, which means just as I described it for physical form, meaning just as the things you see are not coming from their own side, their twinkie nature, sorry, cupcake nature. And just as the things you see are being produced by your past karma in your own mind, their Twinkie nature, just as that, the negative thing and the positive thing, the emptiness and the dependent origination, both apply to every seeable thing and by extension every physical thing in your world and about you. The same is true of all the other parts of your world. And those are tsorwa, meaning your capacity to feel things. And I think for us, I mean, for normal, most people, I think, the goal would be to feel great all the time. Bliss, you know, the supreme ecstasy of enlightenment. And since feelings are also empty, and since they have no nature from their own side, then the capacity is there to reach total ecstasy forever. You know, if they were not empty from their own side, if they existed from their own side, we'd be in trouble, because then you couldn't change them. Okay? But since they're empty, the potential is there. Unfortunately, you have to keep your vows to make them change. Okay? And you have to keep your morality, you have to keep your bodhisattva vows, you have to keep your tantric vows. Otherwise, it won't work. So the capacity is there. The potential is there, because they're empty. They should do dushe dan. Dushe meaning discrimination, the ability to tell things apart. And this applies especially to the world and the people around you. If you had different set of karma in your mind stream, you wouldn't be perceiving this room and the people in it the way you do now. Okay? If you had a different set of seeds in your heart, by behaving sweetly over a long period of time, you wouldn't see what you see now. You'd see something totally different. Your capacity of discrimination would be different. And actually, each of the five heaps corresponds to a kind of ultimate knowledge that you get at the end, like Sortok Yeshe, for example. There are five great wisdoms, and each of them is born out of one of the five heaps. Okay, so the capacity of discrimination turns into the capacity to see your world and the beings in it as paradise. Okay. Duchi namme, other emotions, and namashepa me, even your capacity to be aware at all will change into that of a Buddha. And it does not have any nature. Namashepa nam tombao has no nature of its own. Okay. Those five heaps have no nature of their own. All of what he has said up to now, and I think you get the same feeling even from what we've said, applies to the first two paths of the five. Okay? If you take the Heart Sutra to be a manual about how to go through the five levels of spiritual development, we have just covered two of them. Okay? We've covered what the thought process is during the path of accumulation, Soglam, and during the path of preparation, which is Jorlam. Soglam is mainly the spiritual level you get to where you're tired of things going wrong in your life. You're tired of relationships constantly changing and going up and down, and you're tired of things falling apart, and you're tired of your own body getting old and getting sick, and you just get tired of it. It's not like getting to nirvana is giving up anything good. There's nothing there. You know, and then you will have Michael and Zoe Shakes there, and, you know, that kind of stuff. You don't have to worry about it. I think sometimes people present Buddhism in a very, you know, self-flagellation way, where if you're a good Buddhist, you can't enjoy anything, and if you were a good Buddhist, you wouldn't be at Michael and Zoe's enjoying that milkshake. And you know what I mean? Something like that. And because of our Judeo-Christian background, we attracted to that idea, you know, of nailing yourself and things. That was a holy thing, but I mean, the point of paradise is to enjoy yourself there. And it, whether you want it or not, it will be extreme ecstasy there. And, you know, Michael and Zoe shakes all the time. Michael and Zoe shake is a metaphor for what it's going to be like later. And it's not, and you don't have to try to avoid it or feel guilty that you're enjoying yourself. If you watch His Holiness for 10 minutes, you have to believe he's enjoying himself, you know. And It's not like that, okay? So it's not like you want to remove your capacity of discrimination, or it's wrong to feel good, or something like that. You serve others best by reaching total ecstasy yourself. You know, it sounds right. You know what I mean? It's not selfish. It's the way you have to do it. You can't like not reach there on purpose and be miserable and then lead others there. You know what I mean? No, and people have said that. People believe that. People have heard, you know, that bodhisattvas delay their enlightenment or something like that. Forget it. You know, it's a metaphor. Of course, there's no point for you purposely staying miserable so you can teach other people how to reach ecstasy. You know what I mean? It doesn't make sense. And it's not like that. Okay. But you have renunciation for the lousy things of this life, and everyone has that automatically, or you wouldn't be here. You know what I mean? You're not out at a bar or a football game or at a disco or something. You know, you're not there, you're here. So you have that. It has to get stronger. Then Jorlam is where you go through an intellectual understanding of emptiness, and in a way we've done that this morning. You went through that this morning. That is the examination that you do. There are four increasing levels to where you get better and better at it. And those are the four levels of the second path. And the final level of the second path, you have your first direct perception of how you are projecting all of these things. You catch yourself clearly doing it for the first time. Like, you can understand intellectually when I describe it to you. But at the highest levels of the second path, and you do not have to be in meditation at that moment, you perceive yourself, you catch yourself projecting these things. You see what I mean? For the first time, you truly see that the window and the tree and the wall are not coming from their side. They're coming from your side. And you truly see that. You're dealing, you catch yourself, if you did the logic course, you catch yourself working with a dinchi. You catch yourself watching a mental image of God's dough. And then you for the first time, that's not emptiness, you see. You're catching yourself perceiving dependent origination. You catch the dependent origination of things. For the first time in millions of lifetimes, you see that when you look out the window, you're actually perceiving something that's coming from your own mind. Okay, and you catch yourself doing it. You're like, yeah, I can talk about it, and you can appreciate it, and you can even think about it very deeply. But on that day, you'll catch yourself doing it directly. And you realize that that whole big God story is a small picture in your mind, and that you are enhancing it and making it perfect. Come on, you can't see the trees on the left and the trees on the right at the same time. You know, you have to be focusing on the left and then on the right. You can't. You see, if I ask you, are there trees on the left and the right, you say, yeah. And I say, why do you know? And you say, well, I'm looking both of them at the same time. But you can't. First you have to look at the one on the left, and then you have to look at the one on the right. And your eye is going like this, right? I mean, if you watch somebody's eyeball, and then the mind is pasting it together. You know, why does the eye go like this? You know, the eye is, it's like you give somebody a poorly printed book, and half the letters are broken. And they still see the letters whole because of the bokchaks, because of the seeds in their mind to see those things. It's very interesting. You can take a book and wipe out like half of the letters and people can still read it because of what you're used to seeing. And sooner or later you realize that you can't be seeing what you think you see. In one moment you can't be seeing all these things at once. It's a nice, pretty landscape glued together by your mind. It's not out there like that. Okay? And you catch yourself doing it. So what's the use? You know what I mean? Physicists tell us that. You're not walking on the floor. You're walking on a collection of energy. You know, it's just appearing as a floor. Your foot never touches the floor. It's just a bunch of atoms. And they don't have any substantial existence. The electron is flying about 1,000 miles from the new, you know, and it's empty space between them. And I mean, even if you just picture it that way, you never touch the floor. So what's the point? You know, who cares if I touch the floor or not? If I fall down, it still hurts. the only importance of all this is that you could change your reality consciously and design a better one called a Buddha paradise, and you can. And that's the whole point. It's not to sit here and discuss, you know, am I looking at the trees or not or anything like that. It doesn't matter really, does it? As long as you can see them and they're pretty, who cares? That's not the point. The point is that whatever's helping your mind to synthesize a nice, pretty view could also help your mind to synthesize a nice, pretty life without death and not getting old. And at the age of 40 or 45, you could reverse the process. Okay. And you can. Okay. But you have to be virtuous, you know. Okay. It comes from virtue. Okay. And if you're serious about doing that, which you get serious about 40 or 45, you have to practice Tantra. And you have to learn it properly. Sweet, sweet thing, beautiful thing, chock full of morality and purity, and then you have to do that. You know? If you're serious about it, then you have to learn that. Okay. With that, at this point in the Heart Sutra, we're on page 4. In the middle, and he says, Sharibuddhi Dawina, Chitanje Dome Nite, Teni Meba Makeba Magaba, Tima Meba Tima Dando, Tima Meba Kawa Meba. It means we've reached Tonglam. With this point in the sutra, the Buddha, or was it Chenri Singh, has started to describe the path of seeing, okay, Tonglam, the third path. So, you can get the feeling and the sense that in the past, in the words before, where he applied those four analyses, he applied those four profound ideas to each of the five heaps, he's made you think about what is emptiness and what is dependent origination. He's done with the thinking. Now he's getting to the direct perception of it. Okay. So then he breaks off into, if you know Tibetan well, and when we translate into English, you'll feel a big shift. It's like he starts to accelerate. And even the words start to come out. You know, it starts to get intense, and you can feel somebody starting to see emptiness directly. You know, it starts here. Sharibuddhi Dawina, therefore, Chitamje Tomanite, all existing objects are empty. So he says, ah, why go through counting everything? Everything's empty. Okay, chetam chetam inite. Teni mepa mati makamba. He had a good explanation of teni mepa. Where is that? Yeah, he says teni mepa. Now I never understood what that meant. Teni means definition in Tibetan. Mepa means there are none. Okay. Now you're talking. He starts to add mepa to everything. He starts to add the word mepa to everything. Teni mepa makepa makamba. Timamba. He starts adding. There is no. There is no. There is no. And over the centuries, these lines have been misunderstood by generation after generation. You know, 80% of each generation thinks it means that the Buddha said nothing exists. You know, I met a Jain scholar in India on the top of the holy mountain in near Bhavnagar, Gujarat state. You know, and these are the same people that used to debate Nagarjuna, you know, 17 centuries ago. And he says, don't tell me about Tibetan Buddhism. I can read Nagarjuna. I read Nagarjuna. He said nothing exists. You're crazy. then we had this long discussion at the end. He said, that's great. I agree with you. You know, and it doesn't obviously mean that there's no tsenis. Okay? What does tseni mean, by the way? In this case, it means jiten and rongten. Okay? You've studied jiten and rongten a little bit in logic class. Okay? Jiteni means the characteristics of an object in general, the general characteristic of an object. For example, my as a human, my general characteristics would be I function, my nguponess. That's a general characteristic of me. I don't happen to have any self-made nature. My emptiness is a jitsini. It's my general nature, my general features. Okay, tseni in this case doesn't mean definition, it means features. Okay, so my general features, meh, they don't exist. Okay, and my specific features, which the definition of a human in Buddhist logic is, what's it? Mashing Tungoa, which means I can express myself, I can communicate with others, and I can understand clearly the meaning of what is spoken to me. I mean, a rough definition of a human being. Okay. In the French Academy, they said something with two legs that walks upright and expresses itself, and somebody brought in a rooster. Anyway, something like that. That's my specific features. So Chönyi Dorje Shinrin, Chönyi Lama, he wants to make it clear that we're talking about the general characteristic of something, the fact that I live, the fact that I'm impermanent, the fact that I don't have any self-nature, and then my specific characteristics, which are with my humanity, that I am a human being, that I fit the definition of a human being. Those don't exist. Senimepa. Okay? Those don't exist. Senimepa. That's obviously not true. Okay? We distinguish in Buddhism between the self which does exist and the self which does not exist. Okay? Self which does exist is the one that you're watching and the one I'm watching. Okay? Winston is there. He exists. Why? You know, I can see him. And I'm not drunk and I'm not high and I'm not crazy. He's there. You know? Prove it. I see him. You know, that's enough in Buddhism to confirm his existence. You know, so obviously you can't say that that self doesn't exist. You cannot say he doesn't have his general features, and you cannot say he doesn't have his specific features. And you can't say he doesn't have his feature of being Winston. You know, he has all those features. So what did the Buddha mean when he said nothing has any features? The main thing here is that to the Nyamshak Yeshi, to the meditative, to the deep state of meditation of a person who's in the direct perception of emptiness, you cannot see any Winston like that. There are no objects which appear to that mind except one thing, which is emptiness. Okay? Can't not perceive anything else. During that state of meditation, which lasts 15 or 20 minutes, you can't perceive any object except emptiness. Okay? Winston is a positive thing, emptiness is a negative thing. Emptiness is the lack of self-existence that all things have. If I took away all the things which I'm projecting, you see, and just stared at the fact that they never were there by themselves, I'd be perceiving emptiness directly. And while I'm doing that, I cannot see the house and the forest and Godstow and my friends, and I can't see those things. Senimepa. Okay, you can't, to that state of mind, you can't see those things. Even if you could, they don't come from Winston. If I like Winston, I can pat myself on the back. If I don't like Winston, I can pinch myself, because there's only one person responsible for those things, and that's me. Okay, and that's a hard truth to live with. You know, you can't blame anything on anyone in Buddhism. Every unpleasant object you ever encounter, a traffic jam, a toothache, a bad back, people you don't like, New York City being dirty, they're all a direct result of your own actions for each person, you know. So in that sense, Senimepa, they don't have any feature from their own side. Whatever features they have are coming from your side. Okay, and they're produced by your karma. Well, how does my karma work? You know, does it like, I do something bad and this boomerang floats out towards Pluto and comes back and makes me see something a year later? You know, is it like, don't think external. You're back into the external mistake. You're back to number two. Don't think like that. It's your own mind shifting. You know, your last relationship that was so cool at the beginning and broke down, was your karma shifting? That person didn't change. Okay, it was your own mind shifting. If you're tired of it, then stop collecting the karma that makes it shift. And you're the only person that can do it. It's very weird, you know. If you get really good at this, there's no use to complaining about other people. You know, if you're surrounded by incompetence, you know, it's your mind has produced them. You know, you have produced them by lying or letting other people down or things like that. This is a common karma for producing the incompetence that surrounds you. You know, and that's your life. That's everything. If you would just recognize that, then you would keep your vows, You wouldn't bother to criticize other people. There's no sense. You're just making more of them. And everybody would be happy. And you'd reach enlightenment. You know, that's what keeping your book is for. You know, give up complaining about other people. In fact, you're perpetuating it. You're creating more of them. It's an irony of life that the natural reaction is the one that creates more of what you don't want. And if you just lay off for a while, you would see it. You know? If you lay off for a while just out of blind faith, you know, maybe what Michael Roach said is true, let's see if it works. Then you make some progress and you start to believe it. You know, they transfer that person from your office. That lady goes out on maternity. The company does well, and they give you a bigger bonus. And you start to believe it if you keep it for a while. Okay? Tseni mepa. Makepa magapa. We'll do that, and then we'll meditate a little bit. Makepa magapa means things don't start and things don't stop. Okay? Things in your life don't have any beginning, and things in your life have no ending. And I think you could talk about the sun rising in the morning. Okay? Like what? I can understand that whether or not my boss is pleasant to me might depend on some kind of seed in my mind. But what about the sun coming up itself? I mean, are you trying to tell me that 3 billion people are having a collective hallucination? You know? Are you trying to tell me that 3 billion people have somehow collected a similar karma and are somehow collectively perceiving the same projection? And yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying, okay? The fact that the sun comes up in the morning itself is a collective projection due to the fact that that group of people together did something good or bad, okay? 3 billion people. And whole countries can do virtues together and non-virtues together. If a whole country supports a war, everybody in that country, whether or not they're on the front lines, will suffer later from that. If a whole country accepts the principle of killing fetuses, then that whole country will suffer together later. And that's... I'll tell you something very profound. See if you get it. That's what creates international boundaries. Okay? They're not made by people. They're made by karma. You see? It's the fact that that group of people together did something similar together has created what we call the border between Mexico and the United States. That's all it is. The difference between a human and a dog, that border is created by the collective perceptions of the dogs and the humans. There is no other border. There is no ever the difference between a dog and a human, except the perceptions which one is having and the perceptions which the others are having. There is no other difference between a dog and a human. And there is no other difference between Mexico and the United States. And that line between the two is the expression of the karma of those two nations of people. It's very weird. You know, there are no lines between countries except for the collective hallucination perceptions of the people living in each country. And those are real, by the way. When I say hallucination or perception or projection, in Buddhism, we say, you go chu. Today I was talking about go chu, but the toothpick was good enough to serve. And we didn't have a toothpick we needed to make the tormas, but we had something else. And it was good enough to do the same thing. That's called gochupa. Because projections are so good, they can gochupa for reality. Okay? But the fact that things don't exist naturally is not enough to gochupa for not existing at all. That's a prasangika distinction that we make. It's true that things don't exist from their own side. That does not make them unreal. It's true that things have an unreal nature, and that is good enough to say they exist. Okay? A little bit delicate. You have to think about it. Okay? So that's makepa magapa. Things don't start from their side. Things don't stop from their side. Even the sun coming up and the sun going down, much less your relationships and your body, they don't come from their own side. They don't start from their own side, and they don't stop from their own side. So he's getting very, he's going deeper, okay? There have been Buddhist schools that could accept that static objects didn't come from their own side, but who couldn't break through and see that the very reason why things start and stop, the reason why time itself goes on, is also your projection. It was too much for them. They stopped. They wanted to stop at colors and shapes, thinking that that could be true about the sun coming up and going down. They're like, ooh, that's too much, you know. And that is a distinction between sun and moon. By the way, if you ever get weirded out, if you ever get scared, if you ever start thinking everything's in my head, nothing's real, I'm going to jump off a building, please don't, okay? I'm not supposed to teach this subject unless you've been properly prepped. You know, you have to be properly prepared. And the whole foundation of this teaching is, before you do this emptiness meditation, every time, do some tonglen. You know, always. It'll prevent you from flipping out about it, okay? I mean, you have to ground yourself in the fact that you are undertaking this exercise for others, and that your hope is to become truly perfect and truly reach a state of perfection, personal ecstasy, so that you can help other people. And then you won't flip out about it. So don't do Kedrup Jay's meditation without a little dose of Tonglen before. In Boy Scouts they call it tricks of the trade. You know, this is a word of the wise. You know, don't do it. You know, before you meditate on emptiness, meditate on compassion. Why are you doing this? Okay? And then you won't have a problem. I think the other thing that can ground you is there is no teaching on emptiness which doesn't immediately lead into a teaching on morality and compassion. Okay? If you understand emptiness well, you'll be very interested in keeping your book. If you keep your book, you'll never flip out about emptiness. Okay? Most of you have dozens of holy, sacred vows to keep. If you understand emptiness at all, you'll get very interested in keeping them. And if your understanding of emptiness or your meditation about emptiness becomes some kind of weird thing and some kind of black holes in your head or something, then you didn't get it. You know, if it starts to get scary or weird or something like that, then you didn't get it. If you start to get very, very interested in being pure with your life, then you got it. You know, and then you're not going to flip out. You're not going to get weird or something like that. You know, you'll change. You'll get the opposite. You'll get much more caring, much more considerate, much more compassionate. You know, that's a test of whether you're understanding emptiness correctly or not. If it starts to seem weird or disconcerting or what do they call it, disorienting, then you're on the wrong track. Okay. We'll stop there and we'll do a little meditation. Okay. Watch your breath. and take refuge in the ideas we talked about, especially the idea that logically, if you stopped reacting negatively to anything, you could pretty quickly use up your bad karma and your whole reality would change. Then we'll do Kedrup Jay's first part. Pretend you're a child who came into this room like Kirin, and in your mind scan the room from left to right very slowly. This time try to pick out four or five objects that we're going to work with. So as you look across the room in your mind's eye, decide you're going to use a few specific objects, like a few specific people or a wall or a tree or something that appeals to you. Now look at those same objects, scan across the room, stop on those objects, stop on those four or five objects, and try to get in touch with your automatic feeling that they exist out there, from their side, and whether or not they look good, what colors they have, is from their side, out there. Now, the third step of Kedrup Jay's meditation, go through those three objects, or those however many objects you've chosen. And imagine that they were coming from your mind, that there are colors and shapes there. There is something green. There is something square. There is something round. But that it's your mind which is giving it content. It's your mind which is organizing it in a certain way. And various particularly it's your mind which is saying, I like this or I don't like this. But try to see it in a way which is not the way that you just looked at it. Compare your feeling of it as something that exists out there to the idea that maybe it's coming from your side, and that the reason something is pretty or not, the reason that someone else is good or not, is all coming from your side. Try to experiment with those same objects, those same three or four things, and try to get used to the idea that it might be coming from your side. Skip back. Now we'll do Belma Gomba. Belma Gomba, skip around, get good at it. They call it meditative gymnastics. Okay? Go to the first one. Look at the room like a child. Don't worry about where it's coming from. Look at the room and get in touch with that, connect with that special feeling that you've always had, that everything around you is coming from its side. They're all looking at you. Everything's facing inwards. It's not like you're projecting it out. It's all facing you. Jump back to number one, see it just as things, and don't worry about where it came from. Jump to number three. Maybe this stuff is coming from your mind. By the way, it doesn't make it unreal, it doesn't make it an illusion per se. If you go out to one of those trees which you are projecting and you cut it with a chainsaw and you stand under it, it'll still squash you. You'll have a nice projection of being squashed. And don't think it's not real, it's very real. But it is coming from your side. Get back to number one. See it like a child. Don't worry about where it comes from. That's the mode we're in almost all day long. Skip back to number two. Get in touch with your old feeling that it was all coming from inside. Now, with your new understanding, we'll go to step number 4 very briefly, and then we'll take a break, okay? Scan the room. Stop on those 3 or 4 things that you chose. Every time you reach one, stop and think about where does it come from. And let your mind think of it as coming from its own side. And then reject that state of mind and see what's left. Okay? So let your mind stop on a tree. Let your mind get its same old feeling that that tree is coming from its own side. Decide that there can't be a tree coming from its own side. See what's left. Scan the room. Be aware of all those objects like a child. Stop on one. Find a tree that comes from its own side. Really from its own side. And if you find that that tree doesn't come from its own side, cancel it. Go to another object in the room like a person. Try to find a person that you like or you don't like because they themselves are good or bad from their side. And you'll never find one. Because every person you can find, somebody likes them. It means they're not good or bad from their side. It's your mind. And so cancel that person. And if you keep doing that with all the things that you can see in this room, pretty soon you're sitting in a big room of canceled stuff. And that's very good practice for perceiving emptiness. Okay. One last one, then we'll take a break. Pick one specific thing that you can see in this room. Get in your mind. I'm working on this flower over here. It's a lily or something like that. I'm working on the flower. And in my mind, I'm going to try to picture a flower that comes from its own side and did not get to God's door because I was good in the past. And when I look for a flower like that, I can't find one. All the flowers there are there. I enjoy them. I'm having the pleasure of looking at them because they are created by something good I did in the past. The other flowers that used to be there, that were here when I walked in, and that are at God's door by some random thing or because some divine being put them there or because of the Big Bang theory or something like that, all of those flowers never were there. the only flowers on the shelf anymore are the ones that I am seeing because I was kind to people in the past. And all the flowers that number two, my mental state number two thought were there, all the flowers that were existing there from their own side, those are gone. And they're gone in the sense that they never were there. And go back to first state of mind. Just enjoy the room, enjoy the flowers and the day. Very heavy virtue we're doing. This is the exercises which rip reality into two and reveal the truth. And very, very powerful karma. So we'll dedicate it. I'd like to dedicate it to Ken Rinpoche's health, okay? And then take like a 5-10 minute break and we'll come back and do a little more sutra, okay?
Session 5 continues on the next CD.